There we go. Okay, so I am excited about these next few verses. We are, this actually is, so this is Sunday, December 19th. I'm sorry, December 19th. And some of you may have received your black books. So mine did come. So we have the black book, the sealed Book of Mormon, and the yellow book. And I love my yellow book, so I'm staying in that one because I've written all over it. But we are in the sealed Book of Mormon. We are in the Acts of the Three Nephites. We are on chapter 9, and we are starting on chapter, I mean, verse 13. And this has been a very, I think, a very good chapter, talking about how the families are brought in individually and speak with the church high council and go through their desires and needs and wants and begin to implement where each family fits into the celestial law and the consecrated order of all of us put together. And then it also just kind of went on and said, as it started to work, of course there were problems, and that also the church was able to have the resources that they needed. And if the law of consecration works right, then it will prevail. And that this is the Lord's plan. And it has to do with voluntary and doing it voluntarily, the desire of wanting to do it, and being willing to work with each other and work on yourself to gain that spiritual need and desire to love, that it's based on the love for fellow man. So verse 13 starts with something interesting. So we're going to start there. And Suzanne, would you? Oh, she's not there. Valera, are you there? I have all these little names and no people. Dewey. Oh, Suzanne, you just popped your head up.
Oh,
Would you like to read verse 13?
I would love to. However, I don't have my book with me, so
We
I'm
love
just
you
listening.
anyway.
Yeah, so I'm just listening to
Okay,
him.
Valera.
Okay.
I can read, or is she going to read?
I'll read.
Okay.
I could find it. Sorry. What chapter are we on? Sorry.
We're on chapter 9, Acts of the
Okay.
Three Nephites, verse 13.
Okay.
And if you are on PDF, do you want to give a, if you're in a different book, do you want to give a page?
I'm in the black book. It's 185.
Okay, 185 in the black book.
Okay, nevertheless, as the Lord is disclosing this great secret to us, the High Council of the Church feels sad about the grumbling among you, just as it was in the days of Moses. For how much we cannot conceive in our way of thinking, the most effective way to designate this people, their portions according to their families, and according to their yearnings and needs, if not by means of a previously arranged order according to the direction of the Church of Christ.
Okay. You want to add something, Valera, before we open it up?
I just feel like everything has been lined up so perfectly, like every little thing has been thought out. And the Lord knows how, as humans, we tend to think and act. So I love how he's already thought of this.
Has he ever?
Yes, he knows us so well.
He does.
The grumblings, you know, we know that so well. Yeah.
And we're not the first ones to grumble.
Nope. It seems like it was from the beginning. Cain started grumbling first. Let's blame Cain. He started it. We all know blaming is from the devil, so we can't blame Cain. He was just one that was recorded about the first. So. And that's something that I continue to work on, is not to blame anything or anyone for anything. Like the blame, it just puts that contentious feeling inside your heart. As soon as you start to blame, it just, the good sentiments go away immediately. Even if they have merit, even if it's, you know, something that you can blame something, if you want to think of it that way, but it's not right. We should not have that in our heart at all.
Right.
You know me, I like to confess all my sins.
We all are guilty.
Yeah. Well, I find it so interesting that unfortunately it just seems to be the nature of man. Like we just, it's easier for us to just go to the negative, you know? Yep. And it's sad, but it's like the natural man is an enemy to God. And I'm actually in England right now. I'm in Bath, and the Romans were here over 2000 years ago, and they discovered this natural spring that was coming up from the earth. And so they built these baths around them. And one of the things that the people would do is they would get these small pieces of metal, and they would write on them what they wanted the gods to do. And they would throw them in the water. And so, I mean, if there's anything that you could ask the gods, and all of them were saying, curse the person that stole my such and such and such and such. Like everything was negative. It was like mind blowing to me. Everybody was casting into these waters, like just like negative things. And I'm like, wow, isn't that mind blowing? Of all the things that they could ask the gods, you know, that they believed in, they were saying like, curse this person that did that. And, you know, and I'm thinking like, how sad is that, you know? But on the other hand, it was amazing to hear how, in a way, this was like a utopia, and people came that were Christians, and people came that were like, had, you know, different beliefs. And it was kind of like a place that everybody could come and worship how they wanted to. And it changed over time, because they used to, cremate people. And then as Christianity evolved, and they buried people. And so they have some tombs that they uncovered of people. And this one man, they've discovered, you know, through archaeology, that he came from the Middle East, but he was Christian because of how he was buried. And anyway, so it's just fascinating to see how there's nothing new under the sun. You know, we're just continually needing to learn these same lessons about life, and that really we need to just focus on love and being positive. And, you know, anyway, it's just been amazing.
I guess it was good those false gods didn't have a lot of power, huh?
Right.
Right. Yes. Thank you, Suzanne. The first sentence of this verse says, as the Lord is disclosing this great secret to us, a great secret of how we're going to make the law of consecration work and the United Order. Then this is something the Lord wants us to have. And we're not the first to have this, and it has worked in the past. But and then it goes on to say that the high council of the church feels sad. And we just talked about all that grumbling. Last week I asked about who the high council was, and I thought about this all week. I don't think it's today's high council of the church as we know it in the LDS church, and perhaps certainly not in the RLDS Church. I don't think that we even have it correctly yet. And it's partially here is what I'm saying. I think that the High Council is the very spiritual side of the Melchizedek order, the priesthood, that has not truly been put into place yet here on earth, because we only have the lower version of it. So remember, the high part of the priesthood, the Melchizedek priesthood, was the spiritual side. And the putting together of the United Order is not going to be done in man's way, going to be done in the spiritual leadership of the church, which Mauricio has. And
I have a comment when you're done.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you're talking about the High Council, I believe it's the High Council at the stake level. These councils have to be, you know, right next, they have to be close to the people to understand the circumstances. It couldn't be like the 12 apostles of the whole LDS church. It has to be something that's right down, you know, living in the neighborhood. And so I think it's at a stake level, these high councils. Anyway, that was kind of, as I was thinking through it, where these decisions are made. Is that anybody have understanding on that?
That's correct, as I understand it. The High Council was the local, and the 12, the apostles were the traveling council.
But I'm not saying this as the breakdown of structural leadership in territories. I'm saying it as the spiritual Melchizedek priesthood has to be, that portion has to be with and intact and strong where these decisions are being made. And I don't think we have all of that in place yet. So I think that this, so remember last week we also talked about the, how is this going to happen? How are people going to not grumble? How are they going to feel confident that the leadership is making the right decisions? I think that that's where the spiritual Melchizedek order, the people in charge have to have. They have to have that love and that strength and that trust, because it's not our normal mankind position.
What I think, as I've been pondering this, I think that really this won't really be fully implemented until we go on the Exodus. Now, what I mean by that is it's both in the sealed book. It's also in the Book of Mormon. If you understand, there's a structure I sent out a while back. It's a sophisticated structure that they go into the Exodus. And that's the whole message of Isaiah, is that we go out into an exodus. Now, when not everybody is going to just say, gee, I'm going to leave my home and go follow Joe Blow, Davidic servant, or whoever out into the wilderness. And so, you know, you're going to have some very righteous people to begin with, because most won't. Most will not leave their homes. You know, right before Russia and China attacked the world, they just assumed, hey, I'm going to just see if I can make it in here in Utah or wherever. But the people who go on that exodus, I think they're the ones that are most likely, or at least have a pretty good chance at living this, because you would naturally be pulling all your resources. Anyway, that's one of my thoughts. And then, of course, that exodus is eventually going to find itself in Missouri. Now, hopefully the people in Missouri will be able to also live it. But one of the things where I see it being implemented completely is in this up and coming exodus. I'm done.
Any other comments?
I agree with that. During the time, I don't believe this is going to be a real critical thing during the first periods of chaos, and as that chaos increases and increases, I don't think this is going to be a real issue. But actually, in a way, it will be an issue. I don't know how much you guys know about me, but I think you know a little bit. But I was told 50 years ago, 50, actually one or two, 1970, when I first pulled up with my wife and two small children onto this property where I'm at right now, in Southeast Georgia, I got the strongest impression, and it has never left me. It has always stayed with me, that this, where I'm at right now, would be a time of refuge during a period of chaos, worldly chaos. And what's crazy is last year, a few weeks before my wife left her body, I woke up one day and the knowledge was in my brain. And I don't know when I got it, but somehow it was put there during the night or whatever, that she would soon be leaving her body. She left August 12th of last year. And she was going to become a ministering angel, to prepare to become a ministering angel for her children and grandchildren, because the earth was going to descend into chaos. Now, since that time, I've worked my way back up here. And I am here preparing this place for a place of refuge. Everything I'm doing, I mean, every last penny I've got that I get goes into preparations. I've got two hot houses. It's only 1.6 acres, but I'm in the middle of nowhere. I mean, literally, there's land all around me. There's nobody. The closest house is about a half a mile away. Seriously, I am out. I'm in truly in the sticks. But I have literally, the Lord for the last 15 years has been preparing me and getting, separating me from all my worldly goods. And the only thing I really care about is tools to build and fix stuff with. That's all I care about. I couldn't care less about earthly possessions for just to have it and to admire it or adore it or anything like that. All I want to do is my whole existence now is to help the people that are going to be coming here. One interesting little thing about 3 or 4 months ago, my sister up in Augusta, she's 4 years older than me. She's 86. She called me one morning and she called me by my middle name, Welton. She said, "Welton, I had a dream last night." I said, "Well, tell me about it." She said, "I dreamed that I was up there at the farm with you." And she said, "And there were people everywhere sleeping on couch." She used the word couches. She may have meant cots or something. But so anyway, and I looked up. I said, "Thanks, Lord, for the vindication." So, but anyway, that's just a little bit about me, what I'm doing. I agree with him that I don't think for the first possibly year, maybe two, maybe longer, that we're going to need to worry much about the United Order and the principles that are embodied in the United Order. But I do think that we can certainly, I think it's going to be a time like, and I'm using right now, everything, anything I have, if somebody needs it worse than me, they got it. Seriously, I don't love this stuff. I need the stuff for helping other people. That's all I care about, is for helping somebody else. And I think this period of a crisis that we're going to go through, we can certainly practice everything that's going to be required during the United Order. I'm done.
Thank you.
That sounds like the testimony of a prepared heart.
I'd like to share something in relation to this. It's interesting with all the chaos coming, and we're at the same time we're creating, especially what you said, Dewey, also. I was studying Isaiah this week, 42. 46, actually, because I didn't know where to start in Isaiah. I did a very specific prayer about how I should testify. And I got this numbers through, very specific, like Isaiah 43, verse 7. And it's about that he knows our name. And I remembered that somewhere in the sealed book, but I didn't know where. So I searched, and I found in chapter 7, the Exodus 3 Nephites, verse 3. And I think this is for me, you know, in preparation, I think it really has to do with understanding this work and that it's really going to happen with the destruction and everything. But we have to, and for me, it felt so personal here, verse 3, who among them shall announce this and reveal to us the ancient things written in this book? May he present his witnesses to prove that he is right, so that my people will hear them and say, this is true. So, and it was funny because I, all week I'm busy with this context and this chapter, and I saw the old recordings with you, Steve, and brother Jean-Paul Pratt, and you had a question, that first recording, this is the first recording of the study group you did, and you were talking a lot about the verses surrounding these things, and especially verse 2, new things I am announcing. It's exactly what what says in Isaiah. So for me, I think this ties it all together, you know, emphasize the truth. So I'm really deep into this truth also in Hebrew, the numeric value, the mirroring of things, the types and shadows of the past things, which will happen now, you know, the big miracles which are coming. But we have to really believe that we're able to do this, to consecrate our whole lives. And for me, it's what you said, this is later on, you know, with the Exodus, I think, when it's fully implemented. But we first have to work on our understanding of the whole thing. The stars testify of Christ, and the words, and it's all coming together now. And the great secret is the feelings, you know, all the time, remember him always, you know, that we would walk through fire and through the water. Like it says in the beautiful chiastic structure of these six chapters of Isaiah, we are being created in the Exodus itself. So the whole leaving Babylon, it's a spiritual thing. It's much more spiritual. And eventually, if we are spiritually prepared, then we can build a temple. Then we will be able to do the Exodus with all the fire and brimstone and so this is my feeling, more priority, I think, in getting the really the word out. It's not so thick book to read.
Right.
So sorry, I'm always excusing myself for the time, but this is it. Thank you.
Thank you, Harm. Very, very well said, and Dewey also, and Brother Bob. So we are in the process of learning, definitely. And we have to have this knowledge as maybe the forefront people who are going to help those coming into the United Order to understand how to implement this. And the last sentence of this verse said, you know, it says, how are we going to help people understand this if we are not using a previously arranged order according to the direction of the Church of Christ? And I think this comes right back from the very, very essence of the beginning, and maybe the Great Council, the beginning before creation, that the Church of Christ has an order, and part of it is missing right now. But to put it in proper perspective and have it work, we are going to have to go back to that beginning time of what's expected of us. And that's the total spirituality and the feelings and the love that we have for each other. That's the journey that we're on right now. And when we get to the point of the implementation of the real, physical part of the united order that we're coming as those living stones already spiritually cut with love.
I just wanted to reiterate what you guys have all said. It's been really interesting me being here because my ancestors are from, I have ancestors from Leeds and also from Yorkshire. So my father's family is from Yorkshire and my mother's side of the family is from Leeds. And so I've been kind of checking out some things and talking about my genealogy with the different people that I'm here with. So I have a friend here that I've known for 14 years, and then I'm being introduced to some of his business partners and reconnecting with some business things that I did when I lived in Florida. And so, you know, they were talking about like, oh, maybe we should take you to Plymouth Rock, you know, because I was explaining that I had ancestors on the Mayflower. So they're all like, oh, that's amazing. They were on the Mayflower. And, you know, and as I've been discussing this and observing things, it's just been so, so humbling to me and just mind blowing to think about how strong and how amazing my ancestors were to leave here and get on a ship. And, but you know, they did it because they were showing not only a spiritual sacrifice, but a physical sacrifice. And one of them found a documentary and so we watched a little bit of it. And the guy giving the commentary, he's like, yeah, basically all the people that got on the ships to leave, you know, they were going for religious reasons and for a better life and yada, yada. He's like, they were all like religious nutters. And I just thought, you know, that's the perception of like, they were all just these religious like nutters, you know? And so I was talking to Valera earlier and I was like, yeah, pretty much my ancestors were religious nutters, but like, that's kind of the way they were perceived now. And honestly, probably the way that we're going to be perceived in this time, but you know what, that's okay. Because as long as we're on the Lord's side, it doesn't matter, right? What people are thinking. And we are going to be tested over and over and over. And we're going to go through so many things until we're purified, you know, in order to have these, the way of Christ set up as it was intended to be. So anyway, it's just been amazing to rethink about that journey and what they've done, what our ancestors have done. And so it's exciting to be alive now to just hopefully be a part of all that. So.
Thank you, Suzanne. Steve.
Thanks.
Yeah. When you were saying that, I immediately had a picture in my mind of were they not leaving Babylon also? And then the second thing that very quickly followed that was, this is just like Lehi's dream with a great and spacious building. We can expect that just the same way anybody else would, with strong convictions of righteousness. That means we're on the right path.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Good point. And that's the thing too, is like, it's been, I mean, I know that I've lived a sheltered experience in some ways because growing up in Utah, and but I mean, people here are lovely and genuine and very witty and funny, but like, I have not heard one person talk about Christ. Not one. I have not heard one person, when they've been talking about Christmas, it's all about, oh, what alcohol are we going to get? You know, like, what are we going to drink?
And it's getting worse.
Yeah. And what are we going to eat? And what are we, and I, and like, you know, they've been getting Christmas cards and like one of them has the three wise men on it, you know? And I mean, I haven't said anything, but I'm just going like, wow, you know, it's just all about food and gifts and drinking and drinking and drinking some more and eating some more. And
Suzanne's got a really good point there, even on the Christmas mm-hmm. cards. Thank you. I think we need to move on to the next verse. Steve, would you read verse 14?
Sure. Can I make a comment too?
What?
Can I make a comment on this verse?
Yes. Valky has a comment.
Because we still need to, even if we are not living the United Order, we should still be studying it so that we conceive in our way of thinking, how it will, we have to, I think, start imagining how it will work in practice, in reality.
Jeannie, one quick observation when you're finished. I want one quick thing I need to say.
Okay. Go ahead, Alkia.
Oh. Yeah, if not by means, if we have to so in order to conceive, we have to have a previously arranged order. And so I think it's still important to study the United Order, even if we are not participating in it, which I thought was important to do, actually. But that's my thought.
Thank you. Valky, I think maybe just to add to your comment, we're in the spiritual side of it. We're not in the actual physical part of it.
Right.
And the Lord has given us this book and this time and this energy right now to be doing exactly what Valky said, to be learning it and knowing where we're going and have this knowledge. It's important. Robert, what did you want to say?
Okay. The most often repeated advice in the scriptures is ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find. Now, we know, all of us know, that there are many people walking the streets walking the roads of this earth today who need help. One good way to prepare ourselves and condition ourselves and program ourselves to help when these things start happening, when we're really going to need to be in tune, that ask the Lord to put somebody in our way that needs help, so that we can help them. And you guys understand what I'm saying? That there are people out there. The Lord will help them. Will help us find them. But we need to pray and ask the Lord to do this.
And remember, they're asking probably too. They're lost. Mm-hmm. Maybe they haven't even heard of any of the scriptures.
Right.
And if the Lord sends them our way, it's...
And he can do that. Oh, boy, can he do that.
Yes, he can. Yes, he can. Anybody else before Steve reads the next verse? Okay, go ahead, Steve.
14. Without the program of the church to administer your consecrations, there will be no equity among men who will hold their resources for the benefit of their brethren. For how much each one will enter into debate with his neighbor? With his neighbor, to see who among them should distribute his surplus to the brother in need.
We know that's going to happen, right? Grumbling.
Name it on me.
So who's supposed to be in charge?
It's interesting, the whole debate thing with democracy. You know, that it's changing in the last years with the tone is changing, you know, and that we need to have good feelings. They're trying here in Holland, they're trying to make a new government now and different tone. We have like 17 parties, and it's last 20 years it grew more bad tone, you know. So, and they try to change it now, but it's not working because we're so used with the programs like the weakest links and the roasting of. So it's interesting that it's here. It's logic that without the program, we're lost in debate. So I think of Nephi who says, "My soul comforted in plainness." He used the word plainness more than any other prophet, statistically. So I love that about the order, how it manifests itself here. Thank you.
So I think the program of the church, right in that first sentence, is tied directly to the sentence of the last verse, the direction of the Church of Christ. And to me, that's the ancient church that is being brought through time and rebuilding today. So the program of the church is the only program we can follow to achieve this. Otherwise, like in the very first sentence of verse 13, they're grumbling. They're grumbling. We're always going to grumble unless we shut our mouths, tell ourselves our leader is strong.
The commandments of Christ.
Go ahead, Lynn. Say that again, please.
No, go ahead. I didn't know I was on.
Oh, okay. No, I really think that's where we're at. We as man cannot implement this, and yet we try every time to do our own thoughts and our own way of doing it without going to Christ. And once we forget that, we're lost. So please, everybody, help me when the time comes. Remind me to go talk to Christ.
Well, and I think, too, it's just, you know, some of these friends and business people, you know, they know I'm from Utah. They know I'm a Mormon, or, you know, was a Mormon, whatever. And they know about missions, you know, and they knew I want a mission to Norway. And they're like, what's the purpose? Like, why did you do that? You know? And it's really interesting now as adult to answer that question, you know, and they're like, well, why would somebody do that? And I said, you know, it's all about the good news. It's all about sharing the joy of Christ and the promise of Christ and the grace of God and, you know, just the joy and the hope and the redemption. And, you know, and I just very simply, you know, explained, like, so many people don't believe the Bible anymore, and there's so many misinterpretations, and the Book of Mormon is a second witness, and they're like, oh, okay, you know, that's just kind of, but it's so easy to fall into the negative, and that's what the world has done. And that's totally what's always around us. And it's just exhausting, you know. And the Lord just simply wants us to have that joy, to be like a child, to be like John Pratt, you know, to find joy, to be like Mauricio and swing on the swing and just find the beauty in the simple things of life and in nature, you know, which God created. And it's just, we complicate it, you know, it's just really pretty simple. And that's what we need to do, I feel, is just to have love and more love and joy and just praise, you know, the Lord and our Savior. And that's what's going to help us get through.
Yes, yes. So thank you. Harm, you used the word debate. Debate is in this paragraph. What does a debate do? You've heard of the high school debate team.
It's not a dialogue. It's interesting, the whole discussion thing. I saw this program once that in the 80s, they started in these talk programs, they started to invite people not on the same page, because they noticed they got more emotions with the viewers if we have strife, you know. So before, they must have had something like, okay, this could be a good conversation. They could inspire each other. Maybe they'll get an idea and actually do something together to make something work or something. So that's a big difference, the dialogue and the discussion that was so programmed with discussion and the fight with words. Steve.
I was just saying bye to Russell.
Okay. Bye, Russell. And that's exactly right, Harm. It's a fight with words. It's not a dialogue. And who wins in a debate? Nobody, really. One side presents their ideas. The other side presents their ideas. And we all walk away with, okay, which idea are we going to subscribe to? And that's not following the Lord.
There's an old saying.
Brigham Young once won a debate.
Yeah.
There's an old saying, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still.
Uh-huh. Very good. Very good. Yeah, contention and debates, in my opinion, don't change hearts.
Yeah.
And peace does not equal resolution. And all these things, in my opinion, which, you know, I'm not learned nor a debater, but it all flows downhill. If your heart is right, these contentions and murmurings aren't going to happen. They're going to want to follow the Lord. They're not going to be worried about. And that's a condition of my heart. And I can do that sitting here. I don't have to be in the wilderness where I've been brought down by affliction into humility. Right. I don't want to have to be brought there. I want to stay that way if I can find a way to do it.
Right.
But that's,
yeah,
that's,
and it's,
but that's a condition of a heart issue. And I think everything we've been given, this cheat sheet, this sealed book, is one of its greatest hidden secrets, as he tells us. But he also talks about we will be gathered. Well, he didn't say where. I mean, Mauricio, there may be 100 or 1,000 different pieces to that puzzle. And Mauricio has said that and shared that. We don't know how many pieces the Lord has in this puzzle. There are many. But it's about getting our hearts in the right place so that when the time comes, we're equipped, ready, and able to do whatever he directs us to do. At least that's my perspective.
Valkia, do you want to say something?
Yeah, it's interesting because you mentioned the debate culture that is in America. We don't have that so much here, but you have, like, if someone is a good debater, they go all over the country, right? To other states to debate. We don't have that here. So, and it's also a sign of intellectualism, you know? And if you're more a feeling person, then you could easily find yourself inferior because the other one is so good with words. But that's why this book is also so interesting, because it's about feelings and not how, how strong your words are, how convincing you can be. You can be convincing, but for a
to invite the spirit, it's very different.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So when we meet people and we talk to them, all of us, I'm sure, have ran into that person that can quote you scripture after scripture, and they really just kind of talk down to you, and you're just trying to have a nice conversation about how wonderful the Lord is, and you feel very small when you're done because you say, I don't know all those scriptures. But it wasn't a conversation, that it was a debate, and they were totally in charge. And maybe those are the ones we just say, it was nice to meet you, thank you. Maybe we'll talk more later and walk on. Maybe like the book says in the beginning, don't waste your time on the swine. And
there's also with the spirit of twist, it says in the Doctrine and Covenants, I believe, that it's not from God. And I tried in the beginning, 20 years ago, I'm now 20 years ago, I became member of the LDS Church. And in the beginning, I had friends who studied philosophy and psychology and sociology, and I was an autodidact farmer's boy. But they all looked down on me, you know, for doing the pattern, you know. As God, you know. And they look down on you because then it's the ultimate thing is with the feelings, listen to the heart. And if you're have a contrite spirit and a broken heart, that's the pre thing you have to have to have a new perspective, you know, and right. Perception. So it's kind of logic. I begin to realize more and more that you are the beauty of it, you know, that you really have to love it and to understand. He wants us to understand, because that deepens our love, and it's kept secret all these years, you know. And the more
love we have in our hearts, the more we move towards what Brian was talking about. We grew up and thought each other were enemies, and we don't now. We embrace everyone.
That's the more how we become like Christ. You know, when you think about Christ, you know, he was not a debater.
No.
You know, he just lived his life quietly and simply, and he led by example. You know, we only know of one time that he lost his temper, and other than that, he was very, you know, I perceive him as being very even and very calm. And he just spoke his truth calmly and clearly, and he moved on. He wasn't in the business of debating and trying to convince people.
No, because you don't win a debate.
Right.
Harm, Malkia, did you want to say something?
Well, just a little. It's also sometimes a matter of display behavior. It's sometimes if someone has a lot of knowledge, they want to show it. But if you're talking to someone or talking at someone in that case, then you cannot ask questions because you're busy with showing off actually how much
right showing off,
and so you don't get to know the other person, and that is so important to love another. You have to ask more questions, I think, and be interested in the other instead of displaying your knowledge or your
self-serving
stories thing.
So good point. Ask questions. That's kind of stops the debate a little bit, doesn't it? If you want to continue with it, bring it more into a dialogue. Let's move on. Lynn, would you be able to read verse 15 for us? Maybe Lynn's not there. No, Lynn. Dewey.
All right. 15.
Yes.
Therefore, according to the commandments of Christ, this instrument, the High Council, has been instituted to administer all things related to the Order of Enoch, and that this distribution of its resources is just and equitable. Without that, the wealthy among the covenant people, did I read that right? Without that, the wealthy among the covenant people benefit from the sacred order, why others less fortunate perish for want of help. 16. This system will provide security and peace among the people of the Lord, for all will be able to worship him in comfort and in harmony, without resentment that some apparently have more than others. For how much a just distribution will be made, according to the desire and need of each family, so that all may affirm that all goes well in Zion, that all prosper in common accord, and that all are happy within their sphere of stewardship, without there being a limit to development. If there is one who receives only a portion, is willing to rise, as long as there is a respectable administration of the resources of the kingdom of God entrusted to it, delivering three or more times beyond what was required, increasing by personal merit its own conditions in the family, as long as he maintains his covenant, giving all his surplus to the church storehouse. There's a lot there.
There is. Yeah.
I guess I'm just going to be grateful that there's going to be someone to help us figure it out. Like this High Council is going to help us distribute it so that we don't have to be in charge of keeping track of the Joneses and who has what and, oh, they have more than me. You know, we can just know that it's kind of taken care of by the High Council, and so that we learn not to resent others for what they, you know, what they apparently have. You know, because we all have different gifts, and the stewardship is going to take into account our gifts, and so it's all going to, I mean, in my mind, it's going to work out beautifully because we're going to be able to use our gifts and our talents to increase. And I think that's kind of what this last few sentences reminds me of, the parable of the talents, you know, how we're given different gifts, and then if we use it wisely, we'll be able to multiply. And I'm assuming some people will multiply more than others. But I like it how it says all are happy within their sphere of stewardship. And that is something that I can look forward to, is that hopefully the idea is that we'll be happy in our stewardships. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
we weren't happy, it wouldn't be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, you think of Zion, Zion's happy, right? And maybe there'll be a few kinks along the way, but I don't know. Purpose. It's going to be great.
I kind of see this driven more. I mean, the last comments were like, what I see is something in 20 years, but I see a lot of this being driven by just sheer need. A lot of the people who've seen visions of the future see that the LDS church runs out of resources. And so, I mean, you just, it's going to be an interesting time. I was thinking to myself, you know, out of our group, you know, some of us may just be, some of us may go to Zion down in Brazil or somewhere as a gathering place, and others may hunker down. I mean, I don't know that we may still be meeting as a one in heart, provided we have the internet. But I see it eventually where you'll have to rely on a group of people that are in your neighborhood. I mean, you'll have to. Anyway, I see
maybe some of that choice is going to come from where you're at. If there's no one with your same feelings and belief, maybe that's not the place where you need to stay. And when the call comes, you need to go. We're all going to Bob's, Grandpa Bob, if we can't get to Brazil. But
a little closer.
Yeah. If we look at that first sentence of verse 15, according to the commandments of Christ, that's number one, follow the commandments. Number two is the instrument we're using is the high council, but it's the high council that is going to administer as related to the city of Enoch. We know the city of Enoch lived 300 years and worked well. It assimilated people into it. It gave them a chance, I'm sure. Just like this book has said, this all of this Acts of the Three Nephites, it happened in the city of Enoch. And if we, and we're being told that we need to set everything up like that city. The distribution of resources will be just and equitable. So let's not be naive and think that our stake people are at the position to do this. Because like I told you all last week, when they passed around that paper, I threw it in the trash and say, well, I don't have that much spiritual belief in your spirituality. So if we don't see our leaders with the love of Christ and exemplifying this spiritual part of the Melchizedek order, then people are going to lose trust in that. And I think that this is kind of where it's saying that, because it also says, without it, then the wealthy among the covenant people are going to benefit. We've seen that in the LDS church. Look at all the money they have. We gave it to them because we thought, all right, you're right. Here's my money. And they're all off a lot wealthier than I am. Don't worry about where the money is going to come from to fix the car or buy the food with the increasing costs. And a lot of us that we don't even know are out there struggling, just homeless and trying to put food in the baby's mouths. Why couldn't the distribution be a little better? And that's where we have to get. We have to get to the spirituality and the feelings to make this happen. That's why this book tells us the spiritual stones must be cut first before the physical laying of the temple will be. As long as there is a responsible administration of the resources of the kingdom of God entrusted to that person. Again, that's the love, the spiritual, the feelings. Without any of that, we're not going to implement the united order when we're called to come together as a group. And in any group that we end up in, we have to have these feelings. That's what I kind of got from these two verses.
Well, it'll be a huge separation of people. According to Isaiah, 90% of the world will be killed during the 7 years of tribulation. 10% of the world will live. but just barely, and only 1% will be gathered to the cities of light. So, and so it's really only a small amount of us that will be doing this, which in some ways will make it easier. You know, once you get rid of the selfish people, the Lord will use his instrument, a modern king of Assyria, Russia and China, to take care of that, to take care, get rid of the wicked for the most part. And, you know, then it'll be a lot easier when, well, you'll, the other thing is you'll just have to do it for need, you know, on down the road here. I know this just seems so far-fetched right now because I have everything in my life I want, everything. So, I mean, life is sweet. Anyway, I'll pass.
Okay. Well, let's remember that the tribulations that are coming, if we keep ourselves right with the Lord, stay close and have the relationship that this book is teaching us about, then as in the parable of the wheat and the tares will be separated. And then the wheat will be put in the barn, but the tares will be separated to bound up and be burned. I hope that many people that Dewey's talked about will not come to pass of a loss. The Lord will be unhappy. He has so much love for all of his children, and he's tried so hard to bring us together. But when the call comes to go, then we need to be in the righteous place to be able to go. That's what we're doing right now.
Sister Jeannie, may I say something?
Yes.
This is Bob Keckler. You know, regarding this topic of what's going to happen in the future, you know, I particularly today, what's come to mind for me is the feelings, the intensity of the feelings that went into the production of this book we have in our hands, thinking that the three Nephites, you know, Jonah, Nephi, and Benjamin, I believe those were the three, what they must have felt when they sat down and they wrote these words that we're reading, they lost what they had as a people. And they recorded, you know, by the will of Christ, they recorded that which was essential for future generations. And there was a lot of hope written there. There's a lot of hope in this. There's a lot of expectation that this is truly the key. These are the secrets to make this work. And I just really appreciated sense that what the Nephites shared in their time of living in the law of consecration and living in peace and harmony, it must have been very beautiful. But just can you imagine what their feelings were when they realized it's all lost? It's lost that, you know, the people fell away. And yet there was this great hope that were recorded in these books and preserved by the hand of God to come forth to a future people, a people at a future time. And so I'm really excited that it's all going to come together here. And I really appreciate discussions about this. We don't have all the answers, of course, yet we will get there. And I just wanted to share that I felt that we have heartache. So I think that the authors of this book had a lot of heartaches too, but with that, they had a great amount of hope for the future.
Thank you, Bob. Well, Any other comments on the chapter overall, or okay?
I want to say one last thing, and I will not say anything else today. As we move into the future, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be they're going to have lots of questions. They're going to wonder, why is this happening? They're going to have lots and lots of questions about life, about why is all this happening? They're going to want to know answers. So we really need to have lots of reading material, lots of copies of good books, such as you know what. So seriously, so get prepared. And let me say one quick thing. I was talking to a really good friend this morning in Savannah, Georgia. There is a prayer in the Book of Mormon that is so unique that we must all never forget it and use it as one of the greatest teaching tools, the greatest teaching prayers that can ever be. And it is the prayer that Lamoni's father uttered after Aaron finished teaching him about the plan of salvation. It's in go to 26th chapter of Alma. The 26th chapter of Alma is where it's at. Today, please go and study that prayer and think about it, and think how many people that you know who basically are atheists, have no faith in God, are going to come at some point and ask you, why? And as you introduce them to the gospel and say, you want to really know? And then you tell them about this prayer and let them read it out of the book, out of the 26th chapter of Alma, and let them read it. And then not only let them read it, but look, that, to my opinion, was one of the greatest, if not, I can't think of another prayer in all of the scriptures that is greater than that. But the results of that incredible prayer were equally incredible. I mean, if you guys don't remember what it is, please go today and check it out again and keep it as one of your great teaching tools for the future. That's it. I'm done for today.
Thank you, Grandpa Bob. Thank you, everybody. I think we're finished the chapter. We're going to start chapter 10. When we come back on January 2nd, Harm is going to be our study leader. So those of you who came a little late, next Sunday, we will just have a get together, and anybody who can come, that's fine, but we won't do a lesson. Then we'll start back on January 2nd. Harm will be our leader, and on January 9th, Russell will be our leader. Again, what Grandpa Cowart said was chapter 26 in the Book of Alma, so you can look that up. I have kind of two questions for next meeting that we come to. The first one is, why was the city of Enoch taken up before the flood? And the reason for that question is the city of Enoch was strong, powerful, followed the commandments of God. They were a city of Zion. And my thought is that they would have had all the power of our Lord. So remember, when we are told in the future that when the city of Zion returns and the power of our Lord and the miracles, that will be an area that the world will say, don't go to. You cannot fight those people. So the question is, why was the city of Enoch taken up? Why wasn't it left to fight? Create those miracles and do the fighting. And why didn't people in that time say, don't go against the city of Enoch, just like we've been told, don't go against the city of Zion in the future, that's going to be our refuge and we're going to be strong? It's just a little question that I had. And the other question that I had to deal with the priesthood, the Melchizedek priesthood. So when Moses received the priesthood, when he left, and he went to the wilderness, and that's where he met his father-in-law, and he received the priesthood, the Melchizedek priesthood, and he said in the sealed book of Moses in chapter 14, verse 4. So sealed book of Moses, chapter 14, verse 4. He said, I received the Melchizedek priesthood, but I don't feel any different. How many people as wives did our husbands receive the Melchizedek priesthood and we didn't see a lot of change or anything? Why was that? I mean, when I read that, Moses was like, I'm thinking, yeah, kind of asked that question too. Why did he not feel different? And what did he do about it? So that's the question. What did he do about it? He didn't feel different because, and what did he do about it? And is there a correlation into that city of Zion? Those two things. What? So they're kind of involved. Harm doesn't need to come up with an answer. It's something for you guys to think about this week, 2 weeks. Getting back to our feelings and our love for each other. So I'm gonna stop the recording. Here we go.